irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, only on LA Talk Radio.
And only on May 31st, 2018, the 8-year anniversary of this program.
That's right.
The party in here, Michael.
Oh, 8 years, baby. You
opened
party
the doors and then they came.
The crowds are here, my friend.
Wait.
Wow. Hey, 8 years on the air. Congrats to you, my friend. That's pretty amazing.
Well, and you've been with us for 2 of those years.
Loved every bit of it. Lots of fun. Absolutely.
And hopefully, as I said in a post yesterday on social media, that we feel that we have another 8 years in us. So
That's right.
Hope we'll be there.
Well, Michael, you're absolutely right. And here we are, May 31st. As you said, some amazing performance today on a very special show to celebrate our 8th anniversary of State of the Arts.
Absolutely. Where are you?
Page 2. And what the cool thing is about today is that all these people are here to talk about some really great shows going on across the Southland. Some of our favorite theaters, some of our favorite shows. This is going to be a good show today.
Absolutely. And what a great way to celebrate. Joining us by telephone, we have one of the co-stars of the Los Angeles Reprise 2 production of Sweet Charity. Barrett Foa is on the line. He'll be with us in just a couple of minutes.
We also have some really great members of the incredibly talented cast of the Broadway revival of a show you've got some personal connection to, right, Michael? The Color Purple at the Hollywood Pantages Theater.
This is, of course, the U.S. National Tour.
Yeah.
And my connection to it is that I am very good friends with Ali Willis.
Ah.
Has Ali seen the show since she had an opening or on the tour or somewhere? Because she's always out there.
Detroit, this opening, and
Has she invited the cast to her home here?
We're going on Monday.
Uh-oh.
Henry Higgins. Just you wait.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, no, it is an amazing home. She's an amazing woman.
She is.
She has a collection of artifacts from the 50s forth that are unbelievable.
Wow.
And it's the original MGM party house that they built for their executives who would come out from New York to Los Angeles, and it would be stocked with young starlets. And it was just a beautiful way of greeting their business associates, I guess.
Things my wife won't let us call my house. It's the party house anymore. I'm not allowed to do that. Not allowed to call it that.
It's almost historic. So
that is historic.
And Ali has done a complete reverse with what it looked like and the spread. You'll be blown away.
Yeah,
I look forward to her again.
Even in her own environment, she's more interesting. Here's the deal: I had the pleasure of coming to her home frequently, listening to all of the music she was writing for The Color Purple.
Wow.
And I said to her toward the end of that process, I said, Ali, just remember, I know you're a pop star writer, you know, for pop stars and so forth. I said, you'll be on the stage at the Radio City Music Hall, either winning the Tony Award or certainly being nominated for
called it.
Because she was so far removed from that process.
Yeah,
that's right.
So, but she certainly came through with flying colors.
No doubt.
And Stephen Bray and the rest of the... Yeah. So I'm excited that you're here in The Color Purple.
Yes, we are.
Great to
Los
be
Angeles
here.
Is excited. They certainly were on opening night. My goodness, I'm sure that's every performance. You get the same kind of reaction. So shall we move into our first guest?
Let's go ahead and taking
a little time off from his rehearsals here for Sweet Charity.
And he is very kind to join us here via phone. Let's jump right in and meet our first guest. He is a multi-talented performer. We know as Eric Beale in NCIS, Los Angeles. Other TV credits include Entourage, NCIS, The Closer, Numbers, and 6 Degrees. He is solo cabaret show, Garin and Barrett.
Grin.
Grin and Barrett. Huh, a pun on his name and I messed it up. Grin and Barrett played to sold-out houses. He starred in the off-Broadway one-man comedy Buyer and Seller, starred in The Music Man at Connecticut Rep, and starred, produced, and co-wrote the sold-out hit For the Record, John Hughes. He starred on Broadway in the Tony-winning musical Avenue Q, 25th Annual Putnam County Spelling Bee, and the original cast of Mamma Mia, and played Jesus in the 30th anniversary of the off-Broadway production of Godspell.
We are so excited to have him here to talk about his current co-starring role as Oscar in Sweet Charity. Please welcome the super talented Barrett Foa.
That's right.
Thank you. Oh, what's that crowd? Thank you.
welcome.
Yeah, that eighth anniversary, it's a big one. So thanks for pulling all the stops for me.
And Barrett, Michael didn't get me anything,
guys,
man.
Thanks so much for having me. Yeah.
Good to have you here. So glad. Now, where are you joining us from today?
I am actually in an acting studio in Hollywood.
Wow.
Meeting Laura Bell Bundy, co-star who plays Charity.
Yes.
And we are literally for the first time just locking ourselves in a room and reading through some lines.
I love
literally
it.
Literally right after I hang up with you. So you are really in the thick of the actual first rehearsal.
We are breaking news.
I know, it's pretty cool. We have actually gotten together. She invited me over about a month ago to her beautiful home. She cooked me dinner, and we watched The Knights of Cabiria, which is the Fellini film that Sweet Charity is based off of.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah.
That
was kind of
awesome.
Cool. They're screaming a lot more. They're yelling. There's a lot of more yelling in that movie. They're all, you know, they're Italian. So, and I can say that because I'm Italian. So everyone's talking like this. But in Sweet Charity, there's that. I mean, it's that Neil Simon script that you have. It's just so funny. He shaped this kind of furious Fellini film into this hilarious stage musical, super classic, super 60s. You got that Cy Coleman music with the Dorothy Fields lyrics. So you have funny, you have great songs, and then you have that kind of Bob Fosse sensibility behind it, and all that choreography. So it's just such a beautiful pedigree, this show.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And it's such an amazing story, too. And this is one of those shows that when you go to see it, you kind of leave feeling wonderful. You know, it's got a lot of things you take with it. Can you tell me a little bit about how you got involved with it?
I've been on a show called NCIS Los Angeles for 9 years.
We're huge fans.
Wrapped season 9. We're 220 episodes in. It's unbelievable. Life has completely changed after, you know, one audition. It's so interesting how that happened. And then, but, you know, in my hiatuses, I just crave like a heroin addict just to be on the stage, to be on the board. That's my true love. You know, I came from Broadway. I was in Avenue Q and Spelling Bee and Mamma Mia. And that's all I kind of ever want to do on my hiatuses. You know, meanwhile, Chris O'Donnell and LL Cool J are like, wait, don't you just want to be on a beach somewhere, like relaxing? I'm like, no, that's the enemy. I need to work more. So, you know, I've tackled, you know, Buyer and Seller and, you know, shoved a 100-minute monologue into my brain just for fun on my time off.
That's a long monologue.
Yeah, it's a lot, and it was fun. But so these are the kinds of things I love to do. And Reprise 2, this is the inaugural production of Reprise 2. Mm-hmm. Reprise kind of went away for 5-7 years. And this, you know, they're pulling out all the stops. Kathleen Marshall is directing and choreographing. I mean, how many Tony nominations, how many Tonys does she have? Like, director, choreographer. She just does it all. And I'm so excited to be working with her. And yeah, they call me up and they're like, how about this part? I'm like, oh, you mean that dream part I've always wanted to play? That is, everyone tells me I'm always so perfect for. And then I just reread that script and I was like, yes, this is my wheelhouse.
Cool.
He's a nervous wreck. He falls in love with Charity. Charity falls in love with him. You know, he's full of heart and silliness. And when they said Laura Bell Bundy was playing Sweet Charity, that was it for me. I mean, I saw her. I was, 14, 15, something, in New York City, and she must have been a few years younger than me.
Wow.
And she was playing Tina Denmark in Ruthless off Broadway. And if have that recording, go listen to that funny, clever show. I just thought it was the funniest thing. I saw it probably 4 times off Broadway. Just this little teenage boy just loving this girl, Laura Bell Bundy.
Right.
Little girl. And now we're grown ups together and we get to fall in love with each other.
How
I couldn't be more excited. It's just all the stars are aligned. Yeah.
It is funny how life handles certain things, you know. I mean, at that age, you seeing that show, and then all these years later, now you're working together in a different capacity. And
isn't it?
It's yeah. Great. It's kind of beautiful, actually.
Yeah.
I love her.
It's beautiful.
And yes, she is. And so are you. You know, I love your work. You're a man that has great spirit and such a great sense of humor. And you're easy going. You are not typical of a Hollywood actor in any sort of way, as far as I'm concerned. So we're happy to have you.
Well, you know, I think it's thank you. That's so sweet. Well, I think it's that stage. You know, that stage, that core. You know, that you have that love of connecting and theater and that live audience performer experience. You know, it doesn't shut you off. Like sometimes if I'm working too much on set, you know, you just get really insular. You just get really, you're not performing for anyone. You're not connecting with anyone. It's great because you get to be intimate with someone, you know, with your scene partner, but there's not that sense of a third person watching, you're sharing it with someone live there, and you're sharing it with the crew, who's of course not supposed to laugh or cry,
right?
Then they'll ruin the take. So it's like they're there, but they're not good audience members because they're not supposed to be audience members. And you know, having a big black machine that's recording you as a third scene partner is not the same as, you know, 1,000 laughing people.
Of course, so true.
So of course we just love that. So that's why I need that my theater crack and reprise to Kay McCollin.
Well, that's why we love promoting the performing arts, because it is, as we say on this show frequently, we tell people to get up off the couch and put that remote down and take their children to the theater, especially their children, and let them see
in this
life,
town, especially. In the Southland, you know, when we're just really such a car culture, we need to get up off that couch and go connect live.
Exactly. Yeah. And this type of a show, Sweet Charity, certainly stands up to the test of time. And, you know, we had the movie that was so great, and the Broadway show, of course, as you mentioned earlier. And it plays everywhere. It's a bittersweet show. It's so full of heart. And
it is
again,
yeah.
Neil Simon.
Well, I mean, the pedigree alone. You were saying you mentioned the movie, so you know that's the Shirley MacLaine.
Yes,
played Charity in the movie, and then the original was Gwen Verdon. Then there was that Debbie Allen revival in the '80s, and then Christina Applegate about 10 years ago.
On Broadway,
so you have these great iconic ladies playing this great iconic part.
Well, we can't wait to see you in it, and we can't thank you enough for joining us today on this very special edition of State of the Arts, Barrett. And you are welcome on this program anytime you like. And we'd love to have you in studio someday, but we'll be there on opening night.
I love that. Please say hi. Laura Bell is about to walk in, and we're about to run the iconic elevator scene where
Wonderful.
Oscar freaks out.
Do you have time for our listeners to that for one embarrassing moment story that I talked to you about before we went?
Oh gosh, there is. I don't need to choose from. I'm going to tell you an NCIS LA story.
Okay.
They had to put me, not they had to put me, my showrunner just likes to just kind of play practical jokes on me in front of millions of people. So he put me in a huge avocado costume.
Oh, nice.
Now, my character does not need to be in an avocado costume. It was not, it did not make sense to the story at all. It was just a choice by him, and he just thought it was a funny idea. So yeah, the costume people make it up because, you know, avocado costumes don't actually exist. So they made it up for a big expense, And then there was a stunt that happened, so they had to make a second one for my stunt double. So we have this expensive avocado costume on this hot day, and I'm kind of in these tights and this huge foam thing, and someone tackles me, and it's punching me.
Oh, no.
And this person who did that didn't realize that they were on my private parts. Because because there was a big pit in the way of my private parts, but her knee was solidly on them. So there's definitely a take that went
sadly awry.
It played in the blooper reel at the rap party this year. That was me saying, "You're on my junk." Avocado junk. She was making guacamole, is what she was doing.
So all you could do was grin and bear it, right?
There you go.
Oh, man. And on that note,
Barrett, what a pleasure. Hey, best wishes with Sweet Charity. It's a show we love, and I can't imagine a better person for this role. That's going to be amazing.
Absolutely. Have a great rehearsal.
Awesome. Opening night.
Can't
Thanks
wait.
Thank you so much.
Give Laura Bell our best regards. Bye-bye.
We will. Okay, bye.
Yeah.
Yeah, what a nice man.
Again, of course, the name of the show is Sweet Charity, and a great piece of theater playing starting, I believe, June 20th. Is that
June
right?
June 20th through right. July 1st at UCLA's Froude Playhouse. And that, again, is being presented by Reprise 2. Mm. You can find them online for tickets. And being directed by the wonderful Kathleen Marshall, and Gerald Sternbach is musical director. Casting by Michael Donovan, one of our favorite people.
That's right.
So make a point of going to see something that doesn't come up on the stage here as frequently as it might in some other places in the country. And we promise you a wonderful time.
That's right.
Yeah,
we got
score.
A lot to talk about today. Lots of good shows going on. Absolutely. In fact, we're gonna talk more about a lot of great things. But I think it's time to dig into The Color Purple.
I think so too.
Let's do it.
I think so too.
And now we'd like to welcome our next guest, an actor, writer, and teaching artist with an MFA in acting from UC San Diego. Acting credits include the world premiere of off-Broadway productions of X or Betty Shabazz versus The Nation or Verse Nation, the off-Broadway production of Julius Caesar, and Up Here with La Jolla Playhouse.
Other credits include Ojo.
Oho.
Thank you. Oho. Also with La Jolla Playhouse, Marguerite, Mama Angelou, who saw the world before it saw her, Dance of the Holy Ghost, and The Wiz. And she's here today to tell us about her current role as Nettie in The Color Purple at the Hollywood Pantages Theater on stage for the next few weeks. Please welcome Nehemiah.
Nehemiah.
I almost got
show.
It.
Let's give her a big right. round of
come
applause.
On.
Nehemiah,
come on.
Thank you for having me.
Nehemiah, it's a beautiful name, obviously, if I'm not slaughtering it terribly. But where did that come from? It's such a gorgeous pronunciation, such a gorgeous name. Where did it come from? Family history?
So it's from the Gambia.
Wow.
And it actually has Arabic roots.
Nehemiah.
Wow. Yes.
It's beautiful.
And depending on which dialect of Arabic you speak, sometimes it can be pronounced Negama if you're from Egypt, or it can be pronounced Njeme or Nehemiah. So
it's beautiful. Well, not only that, but I frequently mess up the word Bob. So, you know, we're in good shape here today. I got to tell you, it was such a pleasure to read about you a little bit last night and some of the shows you've done and some of the work that you've done that seems to have led you down the road to play this role.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it just seems like such a wonderful fit. How did you come to be involved with it, and what were your first feelings when you got the role?
So I was getting ready to do a conference in Singapore, and my agent called me and asked if I could audition for Nettie. And so I went in, and the second audition was when John Doyle was in the room. And if we're talking about La Jolla Playhouse and things like that, when I walked into The Color Purple, the associate director, Maddie DiCarlo, was also the stage manager when I did Up Here at the La Jolla Playhouse.
Wow.
So it's so cool to see how the theater community actually, the higher you get, the more professional, higher you get, the smaller it becomes.
Yeah.
And The Color Purple, the original Broadway the original touring production back in 2008, I saw it in Chicago. That was the first professional show I'd ever seen.
Oh, really?
Wow.
Yeah. And
wow.
I was, yeah, so it's cool. So now exactly, we'll be in Chicago in July. So exactly 10 years later, I'll be able to go back to Chicago and do the show and hopefully inspire another young kid
When do you hit Chicago?
July.
That is really cool. That is what a great story.
Isn't it pretty hot in July?
Yes,
in
it Chicago? Is.
Hot time in the city, no doubt. Good time to be in the theater seeing a show, you know?
Exactly.
And the air conditioning.
Every day, twice a day.
That's right. So, Michael, I know you have a special connection with this show, and when this was first being written and you were there for some of that, it must have been interesting to see these stories being told that way, because this story, as we talked a little bit about before the show, has such a relevance to today and what's going on in our world. Aside from the fact that if you remove all that social stuff, it's just a flat-out well-written show. It's beautiful. It's beautifully told. There's stories of people. But when you tinge that and give that extra layer that it's got, with all the social relevance that it has now, it becomes mightily important to see this show. It's got themes and things that reoccur that we're dealing with right now today. How have you dealt with some of that? And that's got to be a little challenging with people who come to see the show and have very raw emotions about some of the stuff going on in our world.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say that we're doing a service to people, and we can't manipulate anyone to feel a certain way, but what we can do is we can tell the truth.
Yeah.
And so it is eerily relevant how the Me Too movement has fit in with this show. And so my hope is that if there's somebody in the audience who has felt a certain way in this world, who has been victimized in some way, that they will feel empowered by the end of the show to voice what they feel. And I think that's what one of the goals of the show is to do, is to really empower people by the end of it.
Of course, I think, you know, on opening night, the audience actually was vocal periodically throughout the show, and including myself, because of things that were happening on stage or being, you know, a line that was being said. I was right there
anthem.
For that.
And I frequently say it on this show, and you mute my mic. I don't know why. Unbelievable. Censorship I've been dealing with.
Oh, my gosh. But
you just have to sing it.
That's right.
So what you're talking about is very, very true and very clear, that it hits that emotional button in all of us, these kinds of things that have been going on for centuries. And, you know, seeing it again is just another reminder that it's something that needs to be cleaned up, and we need to take care of it. And good Lord, you know, we're living in a horrific time right now, especially involving children and what's happening to them, and you know, being abducted and the shootings and so forth. And I won't get into it more than that, but something like this is very inspirational, as you said.
And also, what does it mean to go to a different country, be transplanted? I mean, Nettie goes to a country in Africa. We don't know what that country is, so we assume that it could be anywhere.
Right.
And she tries to assimilate.
Mm-hmm.
So what does that mean to be taken out of your home to go for opportunity, and then you have to be amongst the natives and speak the language, and also it challenges who you are, who you've been in your home country.
Mm-hmm. And how you handle it and succeed.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting that a show like this speaks on so many different levels. It paints this with many colors as it crafts this story. But it's interesting to think that if you strip everything away, all the beautiful hues of this story, and you just say, if we're not taking care of our children, then how can we call us a civilized society? We've got to take care of our youngest. We've got to take care of the people, because they're going to grow up to be that next generation and define how we treat the next generation. And this show does that at its most basic level. So.
And how they learn from us. I mean,
I think of
Mister, and I know we'll get to Gavin soon, and him and Harpo, and how generational trauma is passed down, and how you only learn by what's shown to you.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not shown love, then you don't know love. If you've shown peace, then you know peace.
Yeah. It's interesting, because it doesn't mean that a life has to be perfect. Obviously, everybody has tragedy and sadness, but learning to handle it in a way that gets rid of it and allows you to move forward. And that, to me, is what this show is about. Obviously, there's tremendous racial things that can be dealt with that are very important. And more than that, there's stories of sexism and all these different things that we're dealing with now, too. But at its most basic level, can we just try to take care of young people and give them a chance to grow up? And boy, if that's not important right now, I don't know what else is.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think that if someone comes to the show and says, well, this story is about a black woman, and that's her story, and that's not my experience, you'll have been missing out on something that is so pure and authentic to what it means to be human.
That's a good point.
As an actress, let's go to the other side of this. As an actress, what inspired your performance?
So Oprah often talks about this idea that to gain inspiration, sometimes we have to pull from our roots, who we are.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a teacher in grad school who said, you don't get the roles that you always want, you get the roles that you need. Mm. And I have had to surrender with how much Nettie and I have in common. I mean, she goes to a whole other country in pursuit of opportunity. And so when I pull from my roots, I realize that my dad left the Gambia to come to the United States in pursuit of opportunity.
Wow.
Hmm. I think about how Nettie is so inundates herself with books and reading, and she doesn't necessarily know how to get to where she wants to go, because she doesn't even know where she wants, because she hasn't seen it, but she knows that she wants more. And I am from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I'm the only one in my family who's pursued the arts at the level that I am, and so I didn't have anyone to ask about the business or anything, but I knew that I wanted so much more than what was in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
So what I try to do every night is pull from my roots, find pure moments in the play. And they may change from different stories that I may pull from my past, but surrendering to the fact that there's a more in Nettie and I that mesh than that are different.
Has your father seen the show?
Yes, my father saw it in St. Louis. He loved it. He was so proud, and I was proud. And many of my Gambian family members, and I'm also half Filipino, so a lot of my Filipino family members have also seen the show.
Are you first generation American on both sides?
I am.
Wow, amazing.
And
amazing.
So it's such a visceral experience for me, and I feel so proud to be able to say that my family's decisions in coming to this country, I am the product of that.
Yeah.
Of all the yeses and some of the noes that they have said. So.
Well, this is an amazing story of the human spirit, and obviously deals with so many things, and it does it so beautifully. The energy of this show, I think, is one that's certainly immersive. You get there, and the audience falls in love with it.
They're ready.
Yeah,
they're ready,
no doubt.
Way before it happens. And the set, that spectacular set, that's an unusual set. It gets used in many, many ways.
Mm-hmm.
I was blown away by it. What kind of role would you like to do that you haven't done yet? What's in the future for you in your mind?
Oh, that is such a beautiful question. I'm still exploring that. Yes, there are different texts, playwrights by Marcus Gardley and Danye Love and some Shakespeare roles that I'd like to be a part of. But I would definitely like to start doing more on-camera things. And I can honestly tell you that what I envision, I haven't seen yet. But there are definitely people that I'd love to work with, you know, Quentin Tarantino and doing different romantic comedies, maybe even doing some Marvel. And what's interesting is someone asked me this question when we were in Tempe, and I said, sometimes you don't realize you need something until you see it. And it wasn't until Black Panther came out and I saw Lupita Nyong'o on screen doing these unapologetically, beautifully inspired roles of this active woman. I was like, wow, I didn't realize I needed that. So I want to go in that direction, too.
Cool.
So I would say I'm still discovering and becoming specific with what I want.
And now, where are you based out of? New York?
Based out of New York. Yeah. Harlow. Represent. I'm really not. I'm not born.
But she gives it her all wherever she is, right? I love it. Well, the show we're talking about is The Color Purple, now on stage at the Hollywood Pantages. Obviously, one of our favorite theaters here in the Premier House here in Los Angeles. One of the great things about this show is you go to see it, you go grab a bite to eat nearby, you get to talk about it, you get to experience a lot of the familiarity and the themes that have come back up. And if you're out there and you're seeing theater, it's just a good time. The Hollywood Pantages is a great house.
And it's there for a limited engagement.
That's right.
3 weeks only, through June 17th. And, of course, the Hollywood Pantages Theater is located in the heart of Hollywood at 6233 Hollywood Boulevard. Performance schedule is as follows. Tuesday through Friday at 8 p.m., Saturday at 2 p.m. and 8 p.m., Sunday at 1 p.m. and 6:30 p.m. And individual tickets, ladies and gentlemen, are as inexpensive as $35.
Unbelievable.
You have got to go. You have got to go. And ages 12 and up, take the children with you. Under 5 will not be admitted, so keep that in mind. And online, they are easy to obtain, HollywoodPantages.com or Ticketmaster.com or by telephone at 1-800-982-2787. And last, in person at the Hollywood Pantages box office, open at 10 a.m. daily, and all Ticketmaster outlets.
That's right. And, of course, this is a show that won the 2016 Tony for Best Musical Revival. It's The Color Purple, the musical. Take a minute and get out there and see it. And we're going to continue our conversation, if you'll be so patient, sir, as to wait with us for a little bit longer. We're going to pay some bills first because there's so much more to talk about with this show and the great subject matter that's coming on. So, obviously, a lot of good things going on here in the Southlands. Let's pay some bills and make sure we stay on the air to get all the way to the second half of The Color Purple, all right? We're going to go ahead and talk more about that in just a moment. And before we do that, Michael, shall we thank Princess?
I think we should. And my papers are all askew here. What page are you?
We're going to start on page five. Top of page five.
All right, that's there we right. go. All right, ladies and gentlemen, yes, as Andrew said, we'd like to thank our sponsors and, most importantly, Princess Cruises for coming on board this year as presenting sponsors for State of the Arts, a pioneer in excellence on the high seas for meaningful travelers who seek enriching experiences. Only Princess Cruises offers cruise vacations to help you come back new, providing fresh perspectives by connecting you with nature, cultures, and loved ones in a new way.
One of the best-known names in cruising, Princess Cruises first set sail in 1965 with a single ship cruising to Mexico. Today, the line has grown to become the third largest cruise line in the world. Renowned for innovative ships, an array of onboard options including extravagant entertainment and an environment of exceptional customer service. A recognized leader in worldwide cruising, Princess carries approximately 1.7 million guests each year to more than 360 destinations worldwide, aboard a fleet of 17 modern vessels.
Experience the next wave in vacation travel. At the end of each month, from September to August, one lucky winner will win a cruise for two in a balcony stateroom on board one of the new Ocean Medallion class ships. So make sure to enter every month for your chance to win, and you do that by listening through to this show and going to our page at LA Talk Radio Network. And once you come to it, there is the Princess logo. You click on it. You have that's you're in to registering for winning that amazing trip. And that's a stateroom with a window and a balcony.
Such an amazing
whole
prize.
Thing.
My goodness.
It's a huge, you know, I mean, it's a very valuable room.
Just click on to LA Talk Radio, click on our logo there, and you'll find the Princess logo there, and you'll be able to zip right to it and enter. Obviously free to enter and a great, great prize to win. We're very thankful to Princess for that.
And we'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're so grateful to Mike Napoli and his team at Performing Arts Live for lending their support to State of the Arts.
That's right. And of course, Michael, we are particularly grateful to all of our sponsors, our listeners, and our guests today, and for all those who have supported us for the past 8 years as we celebrate a pretty remarkable milestone here on State of the Arts.
Yep.
They've been great. Now, there's so much going on here in the Southland, Michael. I want to briefly talk before we get back to this amazing show at the Pantages, The Color Purple, the musical. We want to get back and we want to talk about that, but we also want to mention some really cool things going on, including we've got great things in Thousand Oaks. Mm-hmm. Panic Productions is putting on a new show. Panic Production presents Next to Normal, an exploration of love, pain, and how one suburban household copes with a crisis and mental illness. The dad is an architect, the mom rushes to pack lunches and pour cereal. Their daughter and son are bright, wisecracking teens, appearing to be a typical American family.
And yet their lives are anything but normal, because mom has been battling manic depression for 16 years. Next to Normal takes audiences into the minds and hearts of each character, presenting their family story with love, sympathy, and heart.
Next to Normal opens on June 2nd at the Hillcrest Center for the Arts in Thousand Oaks and runs through June 17th.
For tickets or more information, visit panicproductions.org or call 805-381-1246.
And of course, friends of the show involved with that, I believe Mr. Daniel Belushi, who's an amazing young artist, destined for Broadway, no doubt about it, is in that show.
He is in that show.
And I believe Michelle Lane, who's
I believe Michelle's directing the show, actually.
I think she's not directing it, but I know she's very close to the people directing it and involved in the creative team. But I'll tell you, when we saw her in this role earlier, about a year or so ago, I mean, she blew us away. She's absolutely amazing. And not only that, but Next to Normal is a great new musical with lots of good stuff going on. So.
It's a hard-to-swallow musical, but it is amazing.
I mean, it tells stories that aren't being talked about and in such a compelling way. I know that you and I both enjoyed the one we saw when the show went up with similar cast. This one at Hillcrest Center sounds like it's going to be something special, too.
When Andrew and I saw it here at a theater in Los Angeles, as they gave us our press packets, because we were there to review it, they gave us a little baggie that had written on it, and you could see there were different color of things, different color of actually supposed to be pills.
Yeah, yeah. Jelly bellies.
It says don't, they look like and pills. On the outside of the bag, it said, don't forget to take your meds. So.
And they make fun of, obviously, a very important topic in such a positive way, saying that we don't have to be afraid of talking about it, which I think is something that we need to be doing a lot more with theater. Also, we want to mention really quickly, Adrienne Vishnick, who we love so, so much, is performing at the Rockwell. She's been great in so many shows, and she is truly a great performer. If you want to find out a little bit about her, June 3rd, 8 p.m. On Vermont Avenue here in L.A. If you want to get tickets, call 323-669-1550. Don't miss that show either. And now, Michael.
Yes.
The time
has come.
Let's do it. Let's
our next guest, ladies and
so
gentlemen,
patient.
Is a veteran of the stage, having appeared regionally as Cervantes and Don Quixote in Man of La Mancha, Simon in The Whipping Man, Cole House in Ragtime, Flick in Violet, and Mitch Mahoney in 25th Annual Putnam County Spelling Bee.
He played the role of Simon Sr. in the touring production of Kinky Boots and was cast in the first national touring production of The Lion King on Broadway. He appeared in productions of Porgy and Bess and The Color Purple.
He's here with us today to talk about his current role as Mr. in The Color Purple on stage now. As we have said, at the Hollywood Pantages Theater, please welcome the very gifted Gavin Gregory.
Thank you.
Gavin, what an amazing, so glad to have you here, man. And thank you for being so patient with us as we try to cram everything in today. But we wanted to talk to both of you about this because there is no lack of subject on The Color Purple.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And have you done this show before? Is that what I read?
Yes. I was actually in the original incarnation of this musical. I was a replacement in April of 2006, so I was able to go to the...
Don't you ever say that. You're an original.
Oh, I'm an
That's
original.
Right.
I'm sorry. Oh, my God.
An original.
I forgot.
This wasn't a replacement on the original cast?
Yeah.
What an experience.
Oh, my God. It was like a whirlwind because I was there having the Tony experience, and it completely blew me away, and that was my first time meeting the godmother of the earth, Oprah Winfrey.
Wow.
And she... She is the godmother.
The godmother of the world. Nice.
And just had a wonderful experience there. You know, meeting. I still have friends from there that are actually some of my closest friends. Wow. You know, so yeah, loved it. I love the experience of it.
Now, your personality here in person as Gavin is quite different from Mr.
Yes, it is.
Boy can act a little bit, man. I tell you, it takes some chops to change that gregarious personality. Is that hard to do or is it cathartic? I would think it might be cathartic as well.
It is a bit cathartic, but at the same time, I've been told this so many times. They all call me a big softy, the cast. But I think that some of the nicest people play the best villains. I have a friend of mine that's currently on The Haves and Have Nots, and she's like on TV, and she's like completely like, I don't even know who this woman is when I see her on TV. I started calling
it's
her
like
by
pouring
her name
it into a skin.
And she is the sweetest woman, but yet gets death threats, so she does her job.
Well, I'm having fun believing that you can do that as well, because your personality off stage is so gregarious, and honestly you make everybody feel so welcome. When I was reading up on your bio last time, I was just shocked at the variety of parts that you've played. I mean, it must be strange to be somebody who they feel like they can cast in every role.
I love that. Yeah. I absolutely love it. Job security.
I go in for people who look exactly like me, talk exactly like me all the time. So it's a really cool thing to see.
But I will say, like, playing Mr. I actually was in Porgy and Bess, and I was an understudy for the role of Crown, who was actually the talking about mean antagonist with seemingly no redemptive value. playing this role as Mr., it is, I feel like I have a lot of different colors to paint with because he, you know, as an actor, you can't go into the role judging the character. You have to be the character. You have to just do your research about what you think this character was about, you know, because this was a man who was raised by his father, who bought the land that he was a slave on, you know, and created a business. Yeah. And so his father did not teach him these wonderful social skills that we all seem to take for granted nowadays, especially, you know. He didn't teach him how to love a woman. He didn't teach him how how to raise children and to rear them.
Right.
He taught them how to run a business, and you know, life is just this way, and you go and do that, you know. And it's you know, it's unfortunate, but you know, I know that I know men like that even today.
And you've got to tell their story, because there are people who still can learn to change and better themselves through that. You're absolutely right.
That's what I love about this, because one thing that Alice Walker wanted from the musical is she wanted Mr. At the end to actually have that redemption really be seen, and to have that, have a scene with Celie to actually deal with that pain and them coming together and trying to at least close that, you know. So I love that. I love playing this character.
I get somewhat emotional thinking about this show, because I do think that it deals with themes that are so universal and yet so identifiable with this particular group of people who are in this story. So much has been written about Mr. as being an everyman character, or the name itself, you know, that kind of, the way that kind of portrays him, what you immediately think of. Obviously, as an African-American male growing up in America, there are serious, important issues that need to be dealt with today.
Mm-hmm.
Is it at all strange to have people who may never have seen a play about mostly black characters before come to watch you and see that be their first immersion into the African-American experience? Is that difficult? Do you have people who comment on that specifically?
Well, right now, we're being called, everybody is calling us the Black Panther of theater, because it's an all-African-American cast. And there's really nothing out there like that right now. In terms of my character and people, you know, seeing that character, you know, this African-American man, this story is about the redemption of so many people, but mainly Celie, you know, and but the story is about, by and large, all about her redemption. But it does show the redemption of all the main characters, you know. I enjoy the humanity that people get to see me portray as an African-American man, you know, because a lot of times you get these two-dimensional characters, and it's like, okay, that's what being black is. That's what being a black man is, or whatever. And you get to see this man in just in all of his crazy humanity. And I think that that is what's needed in the world today, is just to look at everyone, regardless of what skin tone they are, and realize their humanity.
Yeah.
And as long as we can do that, I think that we can then, you know, start to heal a lot of stuff that's happening in this country. And I think what's happening in this country has a lot to do with us not dealing with seeing,
trying to brush over
all of that. Yeah,
right.
You know,
you
can't cure cancer with ibuprofen.
It's a good.
You know what
don't
I mean?
You believe, and I know there's a lot of important things to say on this, but I've always felt that if you talk about it, there are answers, right? I mean, when things are stripped down to their most basic level, everybody knows how to handle these things. It's just there's a lot of stuff in the way. What did you want to say on that?
I was going to say, seeing a character like Mr., it requires the audience to really question what they see and question how this character came to be who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And because the set is so stripped down, John Doyle makes you focus on the words that are being shared on stage, whether they're through straight dialogue or through the words. So it requires an active audience, critical thinking. I'll add that.
Yeah. I had a great grandfather who worked in the coal mines, and I'd been reading research on coal miners, and there was a great line where he said, I mean, this was it wasn't his life, but it was another coal miner who was speaking about the same time when he lived, saying that, you know, when you come out of a coal mine, you don't know who you're working next to, because everybody's covered in dust.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
And they said that it was everybody just down in the mines working, and it's like when you go down to the bottom of the world and you're just all people, you actually deal with the people. And if we need to be doing that in our everyday lives, this show speaks to that in such a beautiful way, and kind of cool because it's entertaining too, which is nice.
Sure.
So that's a fun thing to see.
And I think all of the characters in the show are very well defined.
Oh, God.
Absolutely.
Especially
absolutely
when it comes to some the character like Shug Avery and that whole section of the show and what she really, you know, you see who she really is and who she appears to be.
And she's my kryptonite. She's Mr.'s kryptonite.
Right.
You know, there is no other. There's no other person.
Just to get more superhero references.
Yeah,
I love
exactly.
It.
There's actually no other person that can touch or move me like the love that I have for Shug Avery.
That you so clearly say in the show.
Yes.
Yeah, big, and the young woman who plays that role is extraordinarily talented.
Yes, yeah. Carla no Stewart. Doubt. Yes. Yeah. Yes, she's
loved
wonderful.
Watching her. And you know that number, of course, is a great number, and it gets the audience going and in a wonderful way. Do you have fun on stage?
Oh, my God. First of all, let me just say, being an actor, an active working actor, is always fun.
Yeah.
but to do a show like this, you know, and you know, some of it is very heavy, but there are such great times that that you can have in the different scenes. I enjoy what I am doing. I enjoy being able to paint this character freshly every night for people, and so I am filled with joy every moment we step onto that stage. I truly am. You know, those are not those aren't just words. I actually really do feel that way.
Oh, I
know?
Believe that. And,
I really
and because
do.
That transcends to the audience. You know, yeah. Right over the footlights, and that's you feeling that way is how we feel about mm-hmm. you. And or
oh,
you,
wonderful.
And or any other actor, you know that it's what you believe you are
mm-hmm.
in that moment is what's being received by us. So.
Good
for you.
Obviously, this is an immensely talented cast.
Huge
there's no doubt about it,
oh
as everything
God.
At the Pantages is. But at the same time, they're also good-looking, which I don't
yeah.
usually like in combination. It's a little too much. But we're going to post some Instagram photos of them here in a little bit so you can see their faces. Put a face with a name. And not only that, but when you get out to the Pantages, you know, it's such easy parking there. You just grab a spot right around the Pantages, walk down the Walk of Fame,
mm-hmm.
And you walk into that beautiful house.
It's a dream.
Right? But it's almost like a time machine, too, because
yeah.
you step in and that building just, it transforms and you feel like you're absolutely where the play is taking place, which is so cool. I love that. And one of the things about this show is that it provides so much fodder for future communication on it, right? You can talk about the issues, you can talk about the people, you can talk about the story, but most of all, you're going to leave singing the music, which is kind of cool,
oh,
too.
Yeah.
So,
oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's love a great it. Testament to the creative team.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the earlier when we were talking about Allie and her house out here, Alice Walker came to the house several times
uh-huh.
and sat in the living room listening to mm-hmm. Allie's score coming out of her studio. Mm-hmm. It was a very exciting time.
That must have been amazing.
It
to
was.
Sit there and hear
it was.
I can only imagine.
So, ladies and gentlemen, again, and we'll tell you this for the last time, and then we will come to the end of the show. But Hollywood Pantages Theater, The Color Purple, in progress now through June 17th. And then mm-hmm. it goes over to the Segerstrom mm-hmm. Hall in Costa Mesa. And that's at the 600 Town Center Drive. Beautiful theater down there. That runs June 19th through the 24th. Tuesday through Friday at 7:30 p.m., Saturday at 2 p.m. and 7:30 p.m., Sunday at 1 p.m. and 6:30 p.m. is their schedule. And their tickets are actually a little lower than the Pantages. They start at $29. So you really have no excuse not to go and see
That's
this
right.
show. If you
That's
haven't
right.
seen it, or even if you have, take somebody that hasn't seen it and enjoy it a second time.
Now, obviously, social media is such an important tool today. Do you guys have social media where people can follow you just to learn more about you?
Oh, yes, most definitely. On Instagram, I am Gavin Gregory Soul.
Wow.
Yes.
Like S-O-U-L? Yeah. S-O-U-L?
Yes, oh, S-O-U-L.
Very nice.
And Gavin Gregory Music on Facebook.
Very nice. Very
yes.
nice.
To that, yeah. I would say, hell yeah.
I have Instagram as well, and I'm at Lady Nyay. It's LADY _NJAY.
Cool.
I'm mainly on Instagram, not so much Facebook.
Well, right. I tell you, and that's happening more and more these days.
Yeah.
Each of these performers, and I certainly enjoyed getting to know them today as well as last night, but they're engrossing performers, and they're also people whose careers are really cool to follow, too. You guys got great things ahead. I can't wait to see what you do after this, and I hope this is an amazing tour because it's such an important tour right now and such a great show. So
thank you
rock
so
and
much.
Roll on that break legs.
Thank
It
yeah.
has come to that
Thank
time.
Oh,
God.
Yeah.
That's right.
And now, embarrassing moments.
And terror sweeps over the room.
Mr. Mara.
All right, I'll start. I was looking at different grad schools. This was in 2013, and I was at an NYU panel, and there were all these beautiful alums, and they were sharing their stories, and I was so taken with this one gentleman whose name was Steve, and he was so inspiring, and I asked him, do you do mainly musicals? And he said, yeah, I do. And I went back to tell one of my classmates how unbelievable this guy was, and I loved hearing his story. And she was like, "Well, what's his name?" I said, "His name was Steve. I think his last name started with a K." She was like, "Steve Kazee?" And I said, "Yeah." She was like, "Girl, he won the Tony Award for Once last year." I said, "Oh my God, I love Steve Kazee." I had no idea because he grew his facial hair out, and I was just so, like, you know, learning about information that I didn't, you know.
At least you know your instincts are right. When you meet a charismatic performer, you can tell they got something, you
exactly.
know.
Exactly. So, Steve, I appreciate you, and I'll tell you that whenever I meet you someday.
You're funny.
I have a few to choose from, but I'm not going to say the one that I thought I was going to say. I'm going to say something closer to yours. It's really embarrassing, though. I was doing a... the concert version of Showboat at Carnegie Hall, and during the rehearsal process, there was just this really nice tall dude that was just talking to me, and I introduced myself. I said, "Hey, my name is Gavin. My name is Gavin." He was like, "Hey, my name is Gavin as well," and I was like, I was like, "Oh, so." You, because he was dressed like a dancer, mm-hmm. And he was rehearsing like a dancer as well, and then I was like, "Oh, I hope I get a chance to, you know, to really see your work," because like we were talking, he was just such a nice guy, and then you know, I'm sitting down getting ready to rehearse, and come to find out, it's Gavin Creel.
I was thinking.
Yes. And I'm like, "Oh my God, I didn't know." You know what I mean? Just totally ignorant.
Our guests today are great actors, great talents, great people. Not great at recognizing stars, man. Need a little help on that.
I love you,
That's
Gavin.
Amazing. Have you had communication since? Obviously, did the whole show with him. So
yeah, but yeah.
Did you ever tell him that?
I haven't had the opportunity yet. Hopefully, we'll do another show.
But he listens to the show, I'm sure. He heard it today, man.
Oh, okay,
he's a big
great.
Fan of State of the Arts, I'm sure. That's great. Well, the show we've been talking so much about today is The Color Purple, the musical at Hollywood Pantages. A great, great show. And obviously there through June 17th.
Mm-hmm. And it is your chance to see the tour, which is, you should go online to the official website for the tour if you're listening to this program in some other part of the country, because it may be coming to a city near you.
That's right. We also want to thank Barrett so much for joining us today, talking about Sweet Charity, a show that I think he was just meant to play. He's going to be so
Barrett
fantastic.
Barrett Foer, yes. That's and right. he's a delightful guy. And
really
as,
is.
As you heard, he's so easygoing. So.
And, of course, that show is playing all the way through, I believe, the 24th. Is that correct?
Sweet Charity.
Or July 1st, I believe.
July 1st,
That's
yeah.
absolutely right. Of course, Next to Normal up in Thousand Oaks, California at the Hillcrest Performing Center for the Arts, or Hillcrest Center for the Arts. Next to Normal is a musical about mental health issues, and truly a remarkable cast in this one. Great friends of the show in that.
Thank you guys so much for taking time,
Thank
especially
you.
During
a,
on
us.
A work day to come and
right?
visit us and talk to us.
Thank yeah. you so much for having us,
absolutely.
Really. It means
you
a
come
lot.
Back and see us again when you come back through town?
Definitely.
All right.
Absolutely.
We got it on air. That's a promise.
All right.
My name is Andrew David James.
And I'm Michael Sterling. And Andrew, it's always a pleasure being here with you and
you
having you sit in that chair and being across from you for the last 2 years, about 8 years.
Happy anniversary, my friend.
Happy anniversary to you, too.
Seriously, sir. It's been an absolute pleasure. But, Michael, what I want to know is where do I get to see you next week?
On the radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, only on LA Talk Radio.